Hello everyone, welcome to the Under 30 Chit Chat, where we talk to Forbes Middle East 30 Under 30 listers who are changing the world around them and shaping the future of the region. I'm Layana Bishkayir, and I have with me here the co-founders of My Sayara, Chiran Chandran and Ansar Latif. Thanks for being with us, guys.
Hey, how are you? Good?
All good. It's really good to see you here after 2 years. I remember that both of you were featured in our 2022 list. So we have a lot of things to catch up. But before we get into how the business has been going and everything that you are doing now, I want to start with your stories, with each individual story of how you got into this domain, where things have started, and how, you know, reached where you are today.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So I always tell people that I was kind of born in a garage, because that's literally, you know, the earliest memories I have is my father pulling me away from school, taking me out on my lunch break to visit his tire shop. And it just was super exciting being there from a young child, just understanding the technicalities of things. And it was always ingrained in me that I need to do something in the automotive industry. So fast forward, after I graduated, the first thing I did was come back and try and help my father's business. And I soon saw how, you know, super fragmented the industry was. You know, there was a couple of stores for just tires, a couple of stores for just spare parts. And in that, there's further fragmentation. And always got me wondering why, you know, the most important thing about this industry is the car owner happy? Fast forward, I meet this young gentleman. I'll ask him to, you know, give him his origin story as well.
Very similar to him, second generation. My dad came here in the late 70s, set up his first business in the automotive business, supply chain, spare parts, distribution, etc. That was in 88. And then I was born in 92. So literally born into this business. It runs in my veins. And by the time I graduated 2014, I was thrown right into that business again. And we were in the business of selling products to workshops. And fortunately, Turing had a lot of workshops at that time, right? So I was trying to sell him certain products for his garages, and he was trying to sell me some. And that's how we meet in 2018, December. And immediately, you know, what I figured was that, you know, this is the secret sauce that was, you know, missing in our team. By then I had put together four people from college, from school, smart friends of mine, to sort of work on a project which I had still not labeled until then. Made Chiranj, and it adds color for that business, for the team. And then it took about, I think, 40 dates in 40 days. That's how I say it.
He does say that. Okay. 40 dates in 40 days. That's
amazing. And then, yeah, here we are.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, like right after you guys met, have launched the My Sayara in 2019.
I think 3 months. It took 3 months from the first meeting to basically figure out that we do not want to be just associated with our parents' businesses. We want to do something on our own.
Yeah.
And something that is more consumer facing than whatever it was before.
I think this speed comes from the fact that we both had years of frustration of not being able to scale something that's so valuable to people, right? In this region, without a car, we could argue that, you know, you're less productive. Like, mobility is so important. And it's after years that I meet somebody that, you know, is the polar opposite of me in the best way, which means that my weak points are his strong points and vice versa. And at the same time, he also had a gap in the team and I didn't have a team, and that was a perfect synergy, right? So yeah, that's kind of how My Sayara started. 40 dates in 40 days.
That's very interesting. Yeah. Way of you know, putting it together. But where did the idea come from, or what did you want to initially do with My Sayara? Because I know you've expanded into many services and into different things, and if you have, at some point you've even acquired another company. So the initial idea, what was it?
Okay. So I was more on the consumer facing front. So I was mainly B2C. That's my experience with my family business. And his was B2B, right? So we saw that what the entire industry was missing was a granular focus on the consumer itself. And that's where we started. Our first ever slogan was car ownership simplified. So we created a platform that has everything to do with car ownership services, which means maintenance, car washes, services, repairs, etc. That's why we started. That was phase one. Of course, early founder mistakes. We went to horizontal, right? And we realized that we needed to focus or create focal points in each one of our services. And that's when we started acquiring people that had that expertise so that we didn't have to spend years developing it.
Okay.
And to a certain degree, that has followed for 5.5 years, right? Today, if you ask what Mycer does, we do everything for you as a car owner from the moment you buy the car until you sell it. Everything in between, you just need to call us.
Yeah.
So, and there's a lot of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can have something wrong with your insurance. You can have something wrong with your renewal, registration renewal that happens every year. You have tires, you have batteries, you've got emergency services, roadside assistance. You want to buy a car, you don't know how much the cost of maintenance is going to look like. You want to buy a used car. So all those things we can actually advise you on. So that's basically our role.
So it's like you give advice and at the same time you also provide services to
the
people.
Yeah.
And it's actually very interesting because I'm one of the people who, you know, I would prefer sometimes just go and buy a brand new car because the dealership will take care of everything for at least like 5 years. So I don't need to worry. They'll come and pick it up and, you know, return it when there is service. So, and there's this worry of buying a used car and taking care of it and having to do this yourself. So it's very interesting to like see that. But when you started it, what were the initial reactions of the people? Did you find, because it was 2019 and I'm sure until you've launched everything fully, COVID was there. So how was that?
So I'll be very honest. So 2019 was, look, we never had super high expectations because we came from backgrounds where, you know, things were super realistic.
Yeah.
So we had the expectation of, okay, it's going to take some time to, you know, kind of boil into people's minds. So 2020 hit and we actually went back to the drawing board and we were like, okay, cars aren't moving.
Yeah.
What do we do, right? This is possibly the worst timing. But in retrospect, it was the best timing. Because what we did was, I still remember this one campaign that we did, call us for anything. Are you feeling lonely? Just call us, right? And we would have people put in stuff like, can you go get my groceries?
Oh.
It isn't even car related, but we were just trying to engage with as many people.
And did you provide these services?
Well, we tried our best, but what we found through that entire journey was that we found a single segment, which was the first line workers, which were the doctors, the people that were moving around, that were actually moving around.
Yeah.
They needed to still get their car serviced.
Yeah.
So what we saw was a large amount of this population start signing up and we just built off of that, what we call now as our initial adopters, which were the people that really needed us at the right time. But yeah, any other thoughts on that?
I think we started off in 2019 with just car service. And like Chiranj mentioned, it came to a point where we were willing to do everything and anything during COVID.
Haircuts too.
Oh. Oh, yes.
The barbers.
Yeah, I forgot that.
Interesting.
And I think But COVID definitely did help us with the digital adoption, increase our pool of initial adopters. More and more people were willing to actually let somebody pick up their car, take it to the garage, service, return it back. That wasn't the case always, right? People were there was a lack of trust within the community and the last person to trust is a mechanic, right? So this is where we sort of had that product market fit, and we were able to grow the user base to over 100,000 with very little marketing spend right around the COVID 2 years. I think to a certain degree, it took the industry 5 years forward, and we were at the right place at the right time. So, yeah.
Okay. And what about the investors' side? How were they, you know, engaging or, you know, supporting? Were they supporting? Was it easy to get the investments? Because I know that you've done some rounds of investments. So how was that?
So regarding investments, normally how this works is, at least from what we've pitched people, we've understood that there's certain appetites, certain industry focus, certain verticals that people are hyped at this at a particular point, and that that gets all the attention for most of the investors. Automotive service is not one of those, right? Partly for two reasons. There is a thought process that says that, you know, automotives are going to go out of fashion. You're going to have more leasing, public transport, etc. And on the other side, you also have electrification, you know, hybrid vehicles coming in. So a lot of flux happening, change in ownership behavior. And then the last piece is basically big competition, right? We've got our competitors from day one were making over $1 billion in EBITDA. And that it's not just one competition, yeah. It's multiple of those, right? Across the region, I think the most wealthiest families have made their money from automotive businesses.
Exactly, yeah. Actually, most of the dealerships in the region are owned by family businesses.
Exactly, right? So from an investment fundraising perspective, it was extremely hard for us. Yeah. We had to convince that we would be, one, winning against this tide, two, we were in a better position than anybody else to do this because we are both digitally native and automotive native.
Mm.
Not a lot of founders get that, you know, that mix in the automotive space, right? At least from our competition, a lot of people have come, a lot of people have left. Everywhere we've seen the same thing. They are either not digitally native or automotive native.
Mm.
And we were able to understand the business more better because of that. And the third thing is, obviously, we believe this region is still having a very high aspiration to own a car. And I don't think it's, at least in the medium to long term, there is a change in that, right? People still look at one of the first things that they want to do outside college is buy that first car.
And then drive
for first long drives and everything. So that aspiration, we get it because we were born and brought up here and we know this.
And also our initial investors got it. That was the most important point.
Yeah.
Most of our initial investors are people that were just firm believers in the fact that they wanted to see true value, which means that, okay, is this product going to help customers today, not 6 months from now or a year from now? It's a relevant problem today. And also they understood our troubles that, you know, perhaps because of the way the industry, automotive industry is hierarchical, it's going to be tough for us to find institutional funding right away.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say that it was a very, very tough journey. And if we had to like maybe impart a learning from that, it is we focused 100% on showing revenue tomorrow. Like you come in today, we can show you revenue tomorrow and it's got a firm product market fit. And the last, we bootstrapped, which means that since we started with our own savings, we were able to show an MVP that was already used by, you know, a couple of thousand people.
Okay.
Yeah. So, we actually raised after 2 years of operation, hitting good revenues, stuff that most investors hadn't seen in the region. So, but again, it is a journey.
You can see his tired eyes. When he talks about it, it's just tired eyes.
Yeah. I can see how tough the journey was. Yeah. I can sense it. And you both mentioned how tough it was. And we talked about COVID. And then after COVID, we had the supply chain crisis that we faced.
Oh, yeah.
Back in 2023, actually, my family was looking to buy two cars. And it was almost impossible to find any dealership that can, you know, provide you with the car that you want right away. Yeah. And we had to wait for months. Things are getting back, you know, on track kind of. But how did that impact my
another scenario? Enabler. Because we remember that time very, very fondly because it means that a lot more people bought cars within the market itself, which were generally used cars outside of warranty. Mm. So it was another enabler that got people to use My Sierra. The best way to look at My Sierra is it's for the car owner that's buying a used car. It's we'll take care of you once the dealership tells you that, hey, we can't renew your warranty or extend your service package. That's where we come quite relevant. And that was another enabler because even though we had spare parts issues, it was around the time that we acquired a spare parts trading company.
Yeah.
And yes, the supply chain issues were there, but it allowed us to grow our user base again and just increase our relevance as a company, period. So that's my response to the supply chain.
Yeah.
That's interesting, you know, to think about it as an enabler rather than, because it impacted almost everyone. I like when I think about it, it's just a negative impact on the automotive industry, but it's an interesting way to look at it. And there is another thing as well. I wanted to ask the electric cars that are coming, you know, these days, and most people are actually, a lot of people are getting interested into. So do you provide services for these cars? Because usually it's hard to find a good place to service your electric car in the region.
I think that it's a recent change that we're currently looking at. Mm. For now, an electric car owner can still engage with MySierra. So we wash cars, we insure cars, we register cars for people, we detail car care, all of that stuff. So even, just one...
Even tires, right? Even tires right. Is the most, like 40% of your maintenance is actually tires. And we do tires.
So the service and repair bit is something that we're working on personally, because what we find is a gap in the industry is that there's, let's say, the aftermarket is not skilled. So coming from working in a garage when I was young, you're working with a product that has like 17,000 different components, right? Mm-hmm. To a product that has 8 or 9 components. And also the key difference, sorry for going super technical.
No, it's okay.
So a normal petrol car, you're working with a 12-volt system, which isn't dangerous.
Yeah.
And on the EV, you're working at something that's more than 120, 200 volts. So it's actually dangerous. You can blow up a garage with that. So we're taking it very carefully, which means that, okay, we are looking at setting up a training center for us as well as our as well as the entire automotive market, so we can upskill the whole market. And I think that's a more organic way to do it rather than just knee-jerk and start EV repair directly. But yeah, it is of interest and we're definitely looking at it. Right now, we don't service and repair EVs, but we're very soon we're going to be.
That's interesting. And one of the latest things that you guys have done and no one else has done, which is opening a cloud garage. And we were just chatting off camera. I was like, what is this? How does that work? You know, we have cloud kitchens. We all know what it does. But, you know, a cloud garage, where did the idea come from? What is it exactly? Tell us.
Yeah, well, I'll actually let Ansar elaborate. Maybe I'll just start off. But
yeah. We made the decision. I think it's going back to the basics, right? For 4.5 years, we operated as a digital player, digital-only player. Last 2 years of it, we were sort of struggling with purpose, with growth. We were growing, but it was not enough. And, you know, we were trying to understand what was working, what are the elements that customers are looking for. We figured that out by speaking to over, 10,000-15,000 of our first-time callers. And what we realized is out of seven out of every 10 customers used to ask us, where's your workshop? So even with all the branding and marketing efforts that we were generating and generating good leads, we were not able to convert because 5 of those 7 would drop out when we say we don't have a workshop, we are aggregating somebody. So the key learning that we got from this was that no matter what you do in this business, the consumer biggest problem to solve for is trust. Whereas we build this business on convenience. So we had to go back to the drawing board and see what gets trust conveyed better, right? So the first thing is nobody trusted a mechanic. So then we had to be at the mechanics ourselves. So we went and saw how this structure would look like, what a cloud garage would look like, etc., and what aspects of it was lacking trust. One of the things is, you know, when you take your car to a mechanic, you always get the feeling that that person is out to get you with repairs that are not necessary or needed, or the parts might be not genuine, or you know, so many things that's running in the back of a customer, right? You yourself are a dealership customer purely because of that.
Yeah.
Again, that was what we wanted to fix with Cloud Garage. Cloud Garage, basically for us, how it works is these are fulfillment centers for us. We had figured out everything else, the demand generation, the operations piece, the last mile logistics, the supply chain, and what we needed to complete our business as an e-commerce service provider was the fulfillment. And that's basically it. Now, coming into cloud garages, you can basically tell us
features. Well, I think, you know, just to add to that, it's also an industry shift. And I think that we'll be seeing more of this in this region, that online players will have an offline presence where you can. So what we got good at as a tech company was that we got good at demand generation, getting an expanded reach of people. But what we didn't get good at was the basics, which is, okay, are you winning their trust with an actual physical location, right? Mm. Are you able to control the processes past conversion of that customer? And that's the online to offline, you know, model. But yeah, as a cloud garage, very different from a cloud kitchen, which is basically a physical infrastructure for virtual brands to deal with them. It's our own brand, which means we're giving the full suite that we used to aggregate, and we're slowly going downstream, upstream, downstream. Yeah. With our own experience. So if you ever see the brightest yellow magenta warehouse in Dubai, it's ours. Like, there's five of them now. We're building 20. But yeah,
that's interesting. And I've also already seen the bright yellow signs. At some point, it was on Sheikh Zayed Road as well. And I think, I still remember it with the logo, the yellow and the pink one. And my question is that, now you've launched the cloud garage, you've added services all the way, but what's the next step for My Sayara? Where do we see My Sayara? You know, what's happening next?
I think. So one of the things is we're getting more and more hands are getting more greasier because we are getting more in the workshop. We plan to have more outlets, more cloud garages per se. These are going to be linked both digitally, going to have an omni-channel experience. Customers who come in there are going to have the same taste as somebody would order online. We expect most of our first-time transacting mass market users to actually use us physically first and then go digital. So whereas 4.5 years back when we were looking at the business, the acquisition channel was digital. I think today for this business, the acquisition channel is physical and the retention tools are physical, digital. Mm-hmm. So it's a good thing we already know the digital part. So we just need to figure this thing. We want to expand regionally, obviously. The goal right now is build the tech so strong that we are 10 years ahead of any legacy competitors. I think we are there. Maybe a couple of more months, we should have a lot of these. The tech that we're building will actually help us enable the consumer better, the technicians better. Supply chain partners who are working with My Sayara better in building predictive behaviors, in building predictive supply chain. One of the simple things in our business, right? I think nobody would notice this, but diving deeper, what we understood is customers have the most negative experience if you promise something, you say that the car would be ready by 4 and then it gets ready by 6.
Yeah.
That makes a 5-star go to 1-star.
It doesn't matter if you fix the car or not.
Yes.
If you've broken that promise, everything is gone.
Yes, that's very true.
The biggest reason for that is supply chain, right? Mm. It's not the only reason. There's a lot of reasons, but the biggest chunk of it comes from supply chain. And that's because they don't know what to predict, what is going to be replaced. Every car comes with 200,000 different individual items. The moment a newer model comes out, they change all the parts. So you're left with so many moving parts and you need to find a just-in-time inventory. And that's the optimization piece that I think is missing, right? So we're building that. And we're building it for multi-brand. So most dealerships get it right for one brand because the manufacturer itself has those processes. It's easy for them to map out something that they own. Mm. But when you do not own and when you do not have access to all the brands, then this thing becomes interesting.
So, yeah. Well, I see it like a perfectly, choreographed orchestra, which is that, what we had with us pre-physical infrastructure was we had spare parts distribution. We had a great platform that's attracting car owners. We had a great, team to merge these two. And then we aggregated, garages that were in the locality. Now, by building our own garages, we enable the fact that, you know, a simple example, let's say that we get an order for a Toyota Land Cruiser coming in for a service. Before the car comes in, we have predictive tech today that we can get the spare part to the garage, make sure that a bay is empty, and then the car goes in and it's seamless. So we can, you know, today give things like same day delivery. So we pick your car up at 8 a.m., 5 p.m., it's with back with you, right? But that can get better, because where it goes to a mess is that if you see our garages, you'll see a Nissan Sunny, a Lamborghini Urus, a Range Rover. Like, you've got multiple brands and you have to fulfill all of these at the same time. So we love it, because this is exactly what is, you know, the challenge that's before us. And that's the interesting bit, solving for that.
Dubai has served as a lab to test whatever we wanted to build as a business. We've got a lot of interest from around the region, strategics, investors, people within the automotive industry who do not look at us as a threat. They want to bring us, expand their business within those regions. And I think that's the medium to long-term vision, where we want to expand whatever tech that we've built, partner with the local houses within a certain region, I mean, within different countries, and then grow our business further. So that's our vision.
Chiran, you mentioned how in the same garage you would see a Lamborghini and a Nissan Sunny. So, like, you would see all sorts of cars.
Yeah.
And I had a question about this, about, you know, the customer base that you have. Mm-hmm. Because usually when it comes to these things, people would either try to find the cheapest garage that can service their car, or, you know, when they buy a new car, they try to get a contract so they save money ahead of time. So what customer base do you have? Who do you cater to mostly?
So we'll maybe split our business into two halves on the customer front. It is the car wash and aesthetic services, and then you've got your car service and repair services. There's two very different customer profiles for these two. So your car wash and aesthetic are generally new car owners, right? They love their car so much, they don't want a single scratch on it, so they wash it every week. They buy a subscription with us, so we come to their house and wash it. They get it detailed from us, tinted from us, all of that stuff. We do PPF, make the car look brand new every day. Now, that customer profile is essentially someone that will one day become a MyCera service and repair customer, right? But the existing service and repair customers are people that generally have finished their new car dealership warranty, and now they don't find the effort versus gain ratio there, because they have to drive to it, they have to book an appointment, whereas there's a provider here that would, you know, you get on the app, boom, we're here, same day delivery, you know, it's completely seamless. While you're at work, your car is repaired and serviced. Now, the demographics there are people that generally drive a car that is 5 years and older, 65,000 kilometers and more. Now, that's the interesting bit, because we have, with these two key, you know, completely different customer profiles, we see a broad spectrum of cars. Now, where this helps us is that we have a lot of data. Right. So we can use all of these behavioral trends to help with supply chain, for example, working with automotive brands directly, because these insights are something that they would never see. Right. Yeah, exactly. That's number one. The con is we have to solve for a lot of problems, which means that each one of these cars, like Ansar mentioned perfectly, each one of these cars have lots of components and they change per model year. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So if you think of the permutations and combinations of that, that's the, you know, challenge to solve for.
That's interesting.
And I think to a certain degree, consumers are getting smarter with regards to depreciation. I'm sure the place that you lose the most amount of money is your car. Okay. If you're changing every 5 years, I'm assuming maybe 60 to 70% of your value is gone, right? If you keep that car for two more years, you're basically saving yourself that 30% back. So that is what we help people do. Even before MyCera was there, the average age of car was increasing in the region. It's approaching somewhere about 8-9 years now. In the US and most more developed countries, where we see the average age of car approaching 13-14 years. So we've got a lot of gap to fill, and that is what we are enabling. On the other side, we also help consumers make smarter first buying choices as well. Whether they're buying from, let's say, the Russell Hoare auto market, or they're buying from auctions, we are able to sort of, with all this data, create a warranty product that helps us mitigate the risk for the customer. Similar to what you pay at the dealership, you save for a warranty and a service package. But here, might be the only company that is able to do across a very wide spectrum of cars, because different risk profile, different damage assessment, and then
And I think that we all know somebody in our close circle that has recently bought, you know, a non-GCC import car.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's coming from the fact that people are getting smarter with the fact that, okay, the weather in Texas is very much like the weather in Dubai. Mm-hmm. So an American spec car, you know, is fine. But again, don't quote me on that. That is not the case. Okay.
But the depends the on the history, right?
Depends of the on car. The history, the state yeah, of the car, absolutely. Etc. But what we're doing is we're enabling people that want to make that choice. Because at the end of the day, nobody wants to get in their car, turn it on, and then see a check engine sign, mm-hmm. right? So we're enabling them by using these data-driven insights to create warranty products and essentially mitigate their risk.
Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. And you know, not just, as you mentioned, you try to cater to so many different people, to so many kind of cars, but at the same time, you're also, you have a very interesting thing that you do, which I know is sustainability. You save water. I think you, I'm really happy
you said that.
Yeah, because nobody catches on there.
Yeah, I know it's both of you speak a lot about this. I follow both of you on LinkedIn and I see my Sayara also brides itself with this. Although we know that the automotive industry or anyone in that industry is one of the most polluting industries.
Of course, yeah.
So to have that aspect and even, you know, you have enough things to worry about and also worry about the environment. Mm-hmm. So tell us, like, where did this idea come from? How is this going?
Yeah, so I think, you know, me and Ansar have been very rational, pragmatic people. And we think that even sustainability is something like that. It's sustainable, right? Even in its thinking. And if we were out here to stop, let's say, carbon emissions through cars, we wouldn't have a business, right?
Yeah.
And we're trying our best to limit things like that. But, you know, just by simply servicing your car on time, you're able to reduce the amount of emissions your car makes, right? On the second hand, what we didn't like was on the car wash front. On the car wash front, you're losing about 150 liters, you know, in a normal watered car wash. And when we had products within our portfolio that you can wash your car with less than a liter of water, why not do that? And you get twice the better shine, twice the better dust repellency, things like that. And you know, we never talk about it too much because unfortunately in the region, people don't care, right? Like at the end of the day, the car owner itself, they want a clean car, right? They want the result and they think it'll come from a watered wash. But just FYI,
I think it's also education, right? Yeah. So, for example, one of the most important things in the automotive industry, at least, the water is one, right? Wastage of water. We recycle all the lubricants that we use. We recycle the spare parts that we use. We recycle even the used batteries that we, when we replace for customers, we recycle those.
And tires.
But product aside, I think sustainability also has a lot of other features, right? A lot of other touch points that we need to look at. One of them is people. Right. People want, as consumers, generally the cheapest price and the best service. It comes at a cost. Who that cost goes down to is important, right? Because mostly businesses don't take that. They actually pass down, you know, non-livable wages to the washers and to the mechanics. And that drops in quality, it drops in training, it drops lifestyle for them.
Yeah.
So this is something we're very clear. We do not want to run a business because our business is going to be manpower intensive. It has to have a lot of people, but we do not want to be in a business that enables these kind of customers, right? Lately, we've been actually looking at it from a very high lens and we're trying to understand. And the term that we've come up with is hijacked users. Right, the users are willing to spend, they're loyal to the brand, but they're not loyal to the concept of, or they do not care enough about the concept of sustainability. And every single business pricing that we've built within Mysera has a lot of thought process put in for the people that work within the business, for the people that contribute. The washers, for example, make more than your Talabat riders, right? Well, we actually have about, on average, 3 years with us, every rider, right? Mm. Whereas the rider industry per se, I'm not pointing out any company per se. I mean, you've got Talabat, you've got Deliveroo, you've got, I mean, you used to have Uber Eats, but Kareem. They work with contractors, and very, very often those contractors are not doing justice to the down the line. So the companies have no say, but they try to build in contracts. Mm. We employ these washers ourselves. Mm. And what we understood is when we are closer to the riders, we are able to understand their pain points better. We are able to make them happier, and none of them want to leave.
One, because I think they, you know, as a rider, you know, like I've motorcycled a whole year in Dubai by myself, and you understand that every ride that you're taking is extremely dangerous, right? Yes. And now to do it as a professional career where you're delivering like, you know, 10 to 15 orders per day and you're on a bike every 30 minutes, whereas you have another choice, work for a company like Mycera and just do 7 washes, right? Mm. Which is drastically reducing the amount of time that, you know, you would be on the road, et cetera. So that's one motivating point for them. The second is the fact that they get upskilled. So our wash management is a person who started washing cars with us. Mm. So there's a level of upskilling that we can provide as well. But I think we're drifting far away from the sustainability conversation.
But my
point is, I think what Ansar's trying to sum up is it's design, the product design, it's the offering, and it's the people. And the people focus is, you know.
It's very important. Missed, yeah.
No, but yeah. It's absolutely beautiful to know, you know, to not get drifted with, you know, revenues and, you know, the work and everything, but to also focus on the other aspect and the people and the environment. That's why I wanted to ask about it, because in this particular industry, people, as you mentioned, don't actually care. The customer does not actually care as long as they get their car serviced on time with the cheapest, you know, possible offering. So it's very interesting. And one of the things that both of you do as well, you know, outside of my Sayara, both of you are angel investors at the same time. So at some point you were getting funding from other investors, and now you are investing in other companies. So tell me about that. You know, what kind of, how did you get into this, and what kind of companies do you invest in?
So I think, you know, I think the term investor is a little too, I think we both have imposter syndrome.
Right? Okay.
That's why we're here. But if we had to remove the word investor, what we do is we just help other founders, period, okay. Right? Which is, even if someone was to come in and then they wanted the playbook for what we went through and what are the things that we experienced, we would be there, not in formal advisory. We would just be there to help. Like if, I think me and Ansar on WhatsApp have groups of other founders with us just for like soundboard stuff with us, right? Mm. And in certain cases where we, when, you know, we're granted the opportunity to actually put a ticket in, we would. There is no strategy.
There's no strategy.
There is no strategy.
I think it's,
I'll be
more
honest, like it's basically help. Mm. Yeah.
It's also the fact that most founders do not get funded, right? So, and funding is not what they need. Sometimes we ourselves become hijacked users of our journey.
Mm.
We think that that person's money is actually going to make the business. It's not.
Yeah.
Money is actually the opposite of what makes businesses, because when there is a lack of money, you actually start thinking, what can you do differently? Until then, every single big mistake Mycera has made is because of money.
Interesting.
Well, yeah, I'd say that starvation leads to innovation, right? So when we've been starved is when we've had our best ideas. And I don't think that this is like a modus operandi or anything like that. I just think that that's where it really highlights the fact that if someone's had more experience than you, they would, that just by them advising would help you more than money itself. And the same for us. Some of our best advisors are people that, you know, haven't put the largest ticket in Mycera, but they've caused the most amount of impact with just sharing the experience and guiding when things are needed. Etc.
Yeah, we just need to give.
We're just playing that role
for
people.
Yeah,
that's very interesting. And you know, there's a question that I always ask to my guests in the show, which is, you know, what kind of impact or legacy you're trying to, you know, leave either out of the business or anything that you actually do. Like, what do you want to actually? What mark do you want to leave here?
Ansar, you can go ahead, and then
I'll. I just told you, I just became a dad recently, yeah. right? A lot of things have changed for me.
Absolutely, I'm sure.
He's a son. He's 4 months old now. Isa is his name. And for me, most of the things that I look at today is basically how can I guide him to be a better human when he is. So if it means running a business ethically better, better for the people involved, better for the stakeholders, honestly, and that's what it is. It's, I think, overnight with Isa coming into my hand, everything about me disappeared. Mm-hmm. I mean, it became stronger. From an anchor perspective, now I have an anchor that I've never thought. For me, it was always friends, family, and my wife. And then suddenly there's this, right? So yeah, I'm super excited about what future holds. Anything that I can do, which basically is experiences that I can share with my son, is great.
Yeah, well, very similar, but we're not sharing. So I don't have a child. But it's very simple. I think when we started off itself, one of the most important things for us is to create regional impact in an industry that is not so glamorous, right? And for me, it's doing what I love. I love cars, right? There's you know, when we met, I told him a very powerful thing, which is I like cars more than human beings, right? And it's to show that, like, if you really love something and you create something that's sustainable, it helps people in their daily lives, you can build something out of it. And at the end of the day, maybe encourage people to follow their passions more, right? And I think that that's something that is so deeply ingrained within us that I don't think we've ever seen it as a job. Yeah. And I think that's if more people maybe found great opportunities to do that, go out and do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. And my last question is, you know, I'm sure so many people see you as successful people, and that's why you've been also nominated or been featured on the Forbes 30 Under 30 because of all of the things that you've done. But after all of these trials and errors, the successes and failures, how do you see success today, or how do you define it?
I'd say mental health and happiness, right? Because at the end of the day, that's kind of what you rely back on when you go to sleep at night, right? Are you calm? Are you happy? Like, you know, those are the things. And the people that are around you, are they happy? And that's pretty much it. Like, I think that everything else is overrated. Everything else is too numerical to, you know, have some sort of, you know, good feeling about it. But yeah, I'd say that just being mentally happy, physically happy, and keeping the people around you happy.
I couldn't have done better.
I've learned a lot of learning from him, by the way.
Likewise, yeah.
That's really interesting, of a way to put it together. Thank you so much for sharing both of your stories with us, for sharing, the journey of my Sayyad. I really, really look forward to, you know, seeing my Sayyad growing and seeing the future of it and of everything that you do. And congratulations again, Ansar, for, you know, your newborn son. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much. Yeah.